you missed a lot of mostly really good Blue Jays years. Obviously came in after they'd sort of won their titles in the 90s and then got out of baseball basically when they went to back-to-back ALCSs. So I feel like you might have had a good record here at Rogers Center at Sky Dome, yeah?
Yeah, I always loved pitching there. Obviously, when the old turf was there, you know, that you'd get the unfortunate, like, triple, you know, that was just a high bouncer over the outfielder's head. But, you know, it was just always a great time. We'd go to the CN Tower, you know, every other time we were in town. And I got a lot of great memories in Toronto, man.
Well, the book is really something, right? It's not, I think it's fair to say it's not your typical athlete book after their career's done. Is that fair to summarize it that way at the very least?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I'm not sure totally what's out there, but I just know that I just wanted to kind of explain a couple things. Maybe after having a little bit of fame and a little bit of money and, you know, kind of fortune and fame, like the subtitle, and just basically just writing something I wish I would have read before I got to the big leagues and really before I became an adult. You know, so I would love for the younger generation to just kind of get an inkling of this idea that everything we think's gonna, you know, make us happy and fulfilled in life, you kind of get on the other side of it and you're like, okay, hey, that was awesome for a minute, you know, or, you know, there's that big spark of excitement, but once it wears off, you're pretty much back to baseline and still searching. And, you know, you see a lot of that misery with some of the most successful and famous people, right? They're taking their own lives and, you know, they end up abusing substance and just destroying their families and, you know, so there's something to that.
So do you link your happiness as a major leaguer? The first 7 years in Oakland went really well. Lots of playoff appearances, as I mentioned, All-Star games, the Cy Young. Do you link it with going to just across the bay to San Francisco and having some struggles that first year?
Well, it was kind of interesting. I mean, I didn't grow up with much of a foundation of something is more important than, you know, what I do. You know, and for, you know, a lot of people, that's a higher power, you know, and for me, I didn't really have one. So for me, going into my career, really baseball and my success in it defined my happiness, defined my self-worth and my value as a human being. And so putting all that pressure on the sport itself, you know, eventually you had to get to a breaking point. And really, that's what happened when I signed the huge contract, you know, went to the Giants and, you know, I was literally pitching for validation and approval as a person rather than just going out there and pitching to win games.
But it's the toughest thing. Like what you do publicly, you know, you got tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of fans of one team and every sport is so global now. You are probably feeling it. I mean, we can have a lousy day at the radio station. People can have a lousy day teaching school in front of kids. And it is really hard, right, when that work ends, to shake it off completely, come home to your wife, come home to your kids, come home alone, whatever happens, and then letting stuff go at the workplace is not that easy, and I'm sure it wasn't for you.
No, that's exactly right. And, I mean, it goes back to those old cliches, you know, playing sports as a kid, you know, do your best and have fun. And I remember early in my career, people would always say that, you know, I was like, man, these guys aren't focused. You got to take it way more serious than that. And ultimately, you know, once I went through all the misery and came back and had some good games in the World Series and all that, you know, I realized that my best is all I can actually do. So everything else is just unnecessary stress. And so I think it's easier, you know, and I had a real mediocre year after that whole World Series high. So I got to really test myself. Okay, can you leave it at the workplace even when it's going poorly? And I was able to say, even after bad games, you know, hey, I did my best today. I honestly did everything I could. And, you know, I think that's where the higher power comes in. You know, if that's what was supposed to happen today and that's my purpose at this point, and then I'm totally okay with that. And that's, you know, that's hard to be. It's hard to be okay with your story, but there's a lot of freedom and peace in that.
Barry Zito, our guest, former Cy Young Award winner, the book's called Curveball. We'll talk more about it. It comes out middle of next week. I put something on my phone, and sometimes it's a screensaver, sometimes it's my family, sometimes it's this. One of the happiest moments in life is when you find the courage to let go of what you can't change. But that is, I got to look at it once in a while, Barry, a few times a week, because you do want to change things, how people perceive you, what other people are doing, what your family's doing. It is really tough to just try and control what you can control. And as a pitcher, you're playing a team sport. You're not a pro golfer. You're not a pro tennis player. You can't do it all yourself.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, it's funny because that's a lot like the, you know, the 12-step credo, you know, change the things courage to change the thing I can and accept the things I can't change. And, you know, really I think that's what life's all about. I mean, I think they say that, you know, the biggest reason for unhappiness is because we're basing our happiness on things out of our control. And when you think about it, that's kind of crazy. But it's so easy for all of us to do. So, yeah, once we can let go of that and say, hey, you know, this is my tiny little sphere of control here, and I'm going to dominate that and everything else, man. I just got to be cool with it.
How much does music play into that? You've always been a fan. There's always been players. Jack McDowell, I was a fan of, and he was in a band. How much did picking up a guitar get you away from the stresses of being a major league starting pitcher?
Oh, yeah. For me, that was my, you know, well, I had a few mechanisms, you know, to kind of find my identity, but guitar was more of a stress reliever for me. You know, I never abused too many things too hard, but guitar was definitely one that I would come home after bad games and just play it and really just look forward to the moment when I could be full time into music and, you know, writing songs and getting into production. And you know, so it's a long time coming now. I'm super happy here in Nashville doing it, but man, I don't know. I probably would have done a lot more damage to myself and other people, you know, if I didn't have music along the way in baseball.
So how about nerves? Again, we can, in our job, become a little more anxious than usual on a given day, a given week. How did you handle having a complete game shutout in 2010? Or yeah, the first game of the World Series, they put you up against Justin Verlander in game one and you're fantastic in that game. How did you handle your nerves for big, big occasions when you played?
You know, it sounds crazy, but I just stopped taking everything so seriously. I mean, you know, I had, you know, a lot of bad years in San Francisco. And, you know, that came to a head when I was left off the roster in 2010, the first year they won the World Series. And, of course, I was making four or five times more than anybody on the team, making $20 million, and basically wasn't allowed to play because I stunk it up too bad. And so that was the result of me trying so hard to get that result that I needed, you know. And when I literally just was able to let go, like you said, let go and of the things I can't control, like results, I went into that World Series game literally going, this is crazy. I can't believe I'm pitching the World Series, man. I'm just going to do my best, have fun, and hey, whatever happens, happens. And, you know, it's simple to explain that mindset, but again, to do it is tough. So for me, you know, it was it's a God thing for me. I mean, I found something more important than baseball in 2011. And, you know, my life's just been different. You know, everything in life's a little bit, I have a little less grip on everything else in life now. And it seems to go a lot better that way.
Barry Zito, our guest, talking with Greg Brady, Ashley Docking, Sportsnet 590, the Fan, starting lineup. We always think, well, some parents would never want to move kids. They're like, I don't want my kids to go to a new school. You don't want to move teenagers or when families break up. Is entering a new clubhouse a little bit light? Even at age 29, do you feel like the new kid in school? And again, yeah, for lack of a better term, the rich new kid in school because of the did you feel that way going to San Francisco? Or did you feel really embraced and nobody's staring at you going, well, now you better perform. You got to help us out now.
Yeah, no, being a free agent and going to a new team, I mean, I think people in sports, you know, and fans, they don't quite realize that there's a huge difference between the player that re-ups with his current team, right, for a contract versus the one that goes to a new team for a contract. And, you know, some guys have the headspace for that. You know, they're in that, you know, it's all about me, you know, kind of world, and they're cool with just saying, everyone get on the train. I'm leading it here. And for whatever reason, I think maybe I was just too much of a sensitive guy or too aware or, you know, I don't quite know, but I was too tuned in to what everyone was thinking about me. And I was really desperate for approval, like I said, and worried about people's opinions of me. So, man, I was living life from the outside in, you know, I was so worried about what people thought about me. I just wanted people to accept me and know that I was, you know, going to perform. And of course, you know, you just can't, you can't live like that. You just got to go out there and do what you do. And so there was a lot of pressure that I put on myself and a lot of nerves. It was very difficult.
You mentioned religion, and I think it's much more prevalent in baseball than, say, another sport like hockey. But can that split a sports team at all? You know, can you find common ground with those who don't share your beliefs? You know, does it hurt or kind of help the locker room?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, religion has just become so polarizing, and I think it has been too for a while. But, you know, I don't really know about religion personally, only because I grew up in a kind of a Buddhist Eastern household my entire life. And, you know, in my early 30s, you know, I found this thing called God, which was really changed my life. But I didn't grow up with kind of the growing up in the church and, you know, having certain people, you know, say hurtful things or be hypocrites or, you know, like so many stories. So I actually still don't really know what religion is. I just know what a relationship with God is. And so for me, that's what it's about. For other people, you know, you'd be surprised at the amount of, I would say, believers to some extent in sports. I think just in general, it seems like a lot of guys do have something to them that is more important than what they do. And yeah. Again, I just never realized how important that was. I mean, I remember being a rookie in Oakland and hearing one of the veterans say, you know, baseball is not what I do, or, you know, it's not who I am, it's what I do. And I was under my breath, you know, thinking, well, this guy's just not focused.
You were known for having a great pitching arsenal, a number of pitches, but how difficult was it to add a new pitch to your repertoire and be confident using it?
I mean, you know, for me, the curveball was just something that always came naturally. I started throwing it when I was 7 and just had a good feel for it. And then, you know, adding a changeup, you know, through my college years really helped. But, you know, 3 pitches was not always enough. So actually, as a result of Ichiro Suzuki, for the most part, I added a slider, you know, midway through my career just because he was one of the toughest guys to get out. So I had to come up with something else. And later in my career, that became a cutter. But adding a new pitch, especially at the big league level, is pretty difficult. And, you know, you see these guys with 4 or 5 pitches, and it almost starts – everything kind of blends in, as my old pitching coach used to say. You know, you throw a slider and a cutter and a curveball, they're all kind of mediocre. But if you just throw one breaking pitch, it's probably going to be great.
Who are some of your favorite teammates that you played with? You know, guys that you could lean on for a clutch defensive play or a big hit when it mattered most?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I mean, some of my favorite guys, I mean, were the guys that had just the inspirational side, you know, in the dugout, in the clubhouse. I mean, a guy like Hunter Pence was always known for his inspirational speeches and just great, great energy. Tim Hudson, another guy that comes to mind early in my career with the A's, who, you know, he was just a bulldog. He was out there, you know, at 5'10", 5'11", you know, just getting everybody out and pitching through pain. And then just one of the truest professionals I ever played with is probably Buster Posey.
Now, before you go, this is our first chance to ask you this with the book out. You're barely in Moneyball. Yeah, I mean, come on. You Mulder, Scott Hatterberg didn't carry that team and have 190 RBI that year. Where are you guys? You're one of the best pitching staffs in baseball, Billy Bean assembled. You're not in the movie.
You know, it's a real interesting story. So the original Moneyball was not the one that we saw. The original Moneyball was a completely different movie, a completely different script written by, I believe, Steven Soderbergh. And everything kind of got scrapped last minute, and they just started all over with it. And I know that the original script was going to actually have me, Hudson, and Mulder in the movie playing ourselves. We were going to shoot that during the All-Star break 1 year. And it was going to be a little more true to kind of the success of the entire team that year. So, yeah, I think there was one scene where there was like a guy with long hair and high socks and a number 75, but that was as far as I made it in that movie.
Yeah, I mean, they're not winning 20 in a row without you three. I mean, that just seems the most obvious plot line that gets, you know, I know some of these Avengers plots are a little convoluted, but I'm like, I kind of feel like there were great pitchers on that team that year. So that's just me, of course.
Yeah, no, you're right, man. You're right.